Hello, welcome to this episode of DebtWire. I'm Hossein Dabiri, Senior Editor and Head of Court Reporting for EMEA at DebtWire Europe. And on this episode, we speak with Maples Group's Kat Burke about the Irish Restructuring Toolkit, and in particular, its potential as an implementation route for global workouts. Kat is of counsel in the dispute resolution and insolvency team at Maples Group in Dublin. She's an Irish, English, US, and BVI qualified corporate restructuring lawyer and has experience in key restructuring jurisdictions, including New York and London. She serves as a delegate to the United Nations UNCITRAL Working Group 5 insolvency meetings and a co-chair and director of the European Network for IWRC, the International Women's Insolvency and Restructuring Confederation. Thanks for being with us today, Kat.
Well, thank you for inviting me to participate, and hello to all your listeners.
To kick off, I understand Ireland offers a scheme of arrangement tool which bears striking similarities to the UK offering. Kat, can you please briefly explain the Irish scheme?
Yes. So actually, there's two principal Irish corporate restructuring procedures. The first one is under Part 9 of the Companies Act of 2014, and that one is substantially similar to the UK scheme of arrangement. It generally follows the same case law. There's no requirement to be insolvent. You can access it with sufficient connection to Ireland. And it's very, very similar in that you typically have your convening hearing, your sanction hearing, and you can choose your classes that are subject to the scheme. Ireland also follows a pro-release and pro-COMI shifting stances and generally follows English case law. There's only three key differences. First one is that being part of the EU, Ireland and Irish scheme still benefit from recognition in the EU through Brussels and Lugano and et cetera. And there's no requirement for the Irish scheme to have a convening hearing. So if you don't want to have it, you don't need to have it. But, you know, in practice, most do have a convening hearing to get a steer on classes. And the third difference is you can get a general stay on litigation under the statute, under the Irish Companies Act, which is a little different than the English scheme of arrangement. The second option for restructuring is called a scheme as well, but it's done through an examinership under Part 10. Of the Companies Act. Now, this has been around since 1990, and it's based off of US Chapter 11. This one can be accessed by any company that has its Center of Main Interest, or COMI, in Ireland. And all that's required for a related company entering in with an Irish company or an Irish COMI company is a sufficient connection. The examinership provides for an automatic stay, repudiation of contracts. You can prepay certain pre-petition contracts. There's a lower threshold for cross-class cramdown, and that's the lowest in Europe, which is about 50%. And because it qualifies as an insolvency process under the European Insolvency Regulation, you get automatic recognition across Europe.
You mentioned that jurisdiction for a Part 9 scheme is based on sufficient connection, and for examinership, the test is COMI. So does this mean that non-Irish groups too could take advantage of the Irish tools? I mean, could groups with no pre-existing connections to Ireland forum shop to do so?
Yes, they can. I'll answer that one at a time. With the Part 9 schemes of arrangement, there's really no difference in regard to English schemes. The court in Ireland has held that you need a sufficient connection. And as I said, it follows the same pro-COMI shifting, pro-release case law. So one example, if you look at NACDAC, a recent scheme, the company there used a deed of indemnity and contribution in the same way that many of these guarantor ricochet schemes are being done in England. And the Irish court had no problem with it in principle, and it said so in its judgment that it was adopting this pro-release approach. We also saw this used in Endo. This scheme just concluded this month, and Maples was involved in both of these cases. In both cases, they used the deed of contribution method in accessing the jurisdiction and releasing claims. Now, if we go to examinership, this is where it gets a bit more interesting. So there was a case last July, Mac Interiors, where the Irish court confirmed that all you needed to access the Irish courts was Comey. And this is slightly different from what people had thought, was that you needed to be a registered company in Ireland. But the court confirmed that you only need to have Irish Comey. It doesn't need to be an Irish registered company. Now, if it's a related company and it wants to access examinership, it can go in with an Irish Comey company or an Irish registered company with merely a sufficient connection. And that was the case in Norwegian Air. So this means you can have either a scheme of arrangement or an examinership process with a company that is registered outside of Ireland, and you can bind European creditors with the EIR, with the European Insolvency Regulation, and you can bind English creditors through a 426 application, and you can bind US creditors through a Chapter 15 if needed.
That's interesting. Given the prevalence of English governing law in finance documents, how can the Irish system be used to restructure contracts with English governing law? I'm, of course, thinking in light of the famous rule in Gibbs, which broadly speaking establishes that where an agreement specifies that it is governed by English law, it cannot be compromised or discharged by insolvency proceedings under a different law.
Yeah, so the rule in Gibbs, while there was one major exception we could all agree on, and that's when the creditor submits to the foreign jurisdiction. And prior to Brexit, there was also recognition of EU insolvency proceedings in England under the European Insolvency Regulation. However, when England fully Brexited, that meant that England no longer recognized insolvency proceedings, and examinership being one of them, under the European Insolvency Regulation. And Gibbs and all its glory came back into play.
Right. So what about the rule in Gibbs and Rubin? Is there a workaround in Ireland?
Well, yes, there is. And assuming the creditor doesn't submit, you need something else to bind the English creditors. Since the Rubin decision confirmed the rule in Gibbs, everyone understood the position to be that if you needed to bind English creditors, you had to do that through the English courts. And it was generally understood you needed an English proceeding for that. Until last year, that is, when the Silverpail decision came out. And it came out with very little fanfare, but it highlighted the ability of Ireland to use Section 426 of the UK Insolvency Act to bind English creditors to an Irish scheme of arrangement, despite the ruling Gibbs.
Yes, Silverpail, that is the rather recent case that is considered by some to be a game changer. Can you briefly explain the significance of that Silverpail decision, as some of our listeners may not be aware of it?
Sure. I really do think it is a game changer. So Silverpail Dairy was an ice cream manufacturer which ran into trouble in 2022. There were 19 unsecured creditors in England and Wales, and a total debt of over 400,000 euros in England. More than 80% of this was due to HMRC. The company went through an Irish scheme of arrangement. At the end of the scheme in Ireland, the High Court of Ireland requested that the English court bind all of the English creditors to the Irish scheme, including HMRC. And it requested this pursuant to 426 of the UK Insolvency Act. This section permits courts in certain jurisdictions to apply to the English court for assistance in an insolvency proceeding. So the interesting thing about 426 is that it's only available to these certain jurisdictions, and there's a list. And we can refer to these jurisdictions as the cricket playing countries, but historically each of these countries has had a connection to England. So in Europe, Ireland is the only country on that list that can take advantage of the provision. Now, there are other big restructuring locations on that list. For example, the Cayman Islands can also take advantage. And no, sadly, the US is not one of those countries on the list, despite its historic connections. But going back to Silverpail, and in this case, the English court obliged and it bound HMRC and the other English creditors to the Irish scheme.
I see, but this relief is at the discretion of the English court, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. 426 does give the English court discretion. However, it's a bit more than just plain discretion to do it or not to do it. There is absolutely a slant towards granting the requested relief. When the court in Civil Appeal granted the relief, it said, since the Irish court has requested the assistance of this court, while I'm not bound to give it, I should do so unless I'm satisfied there is some good reason not to do so. You have a situation where it's fact specific, and I would note in Silver Pill that there was another case before the European insolvency regulations that also relied on 426, and that was Business City Express. Both of these cases involved a new money injection, both Silver Pill and Business City Express. As you say, there is a level of discretion, but also a precedent has been set both before and after the European regulation. Now, there are certain criticisms that I've heard from other lawyers, and that was, this is an incredibly short judgment, 3 pages. It didn't take into account Rubin, and it wasn't challenged. But to that, I would say it doesn't have to be long. It just has to be right. And the new cap side of Rubin wasn't overturned. And the interesting part about the Rubin decision and the NUCAP side of it was that NUCAP actually allowed the use of 426. And the Supreme Court said that 426 wasn't to be used for recognition. Now, these aren't recognition requests. This isn't that. This request came from the Irish court for the English court to bind English creditors. In substance, it has the same effect, but it's different.
This is all very interesting, but one might ask, what would be the advantage of using the Irish system when other jurisdictions offer such well-regarded, tried and tested routes for international restructurings?
Recognition and costs. Those are the two big reasons, and these go hand in hand. With an Irish proceeding, you can have recognition across the EU and in England and in the US with a Chapter 15. So you have one main proceeding and it can be one and done in Europe if you don't need recognition. There's less execution risk in the EU because the court's jurisdiction can't be challenged. If you have only one EU proceeding and you avoid the need for Chapter 11 or parallel proceeding, you can already see the cost savings. But I see other reasons why the costs could be less. Ireland is, generally speaking, a less litigious jurisdiction than elsewhere in Europe. And it's also less litigious than in the US. And this stems from procedural differences in the US and the developed case law on Irish restructuring plans compared with the rest of Europe. With respect to the US, there's no statutory creditors committee in either Irish process. Therefore, any creditors that engage with the process will be responsible for paying their own costs. And if they're unsuccessful, they could be on the hook for costs of the debtor in defending any actions. This minimizes the incentive to disrupt proceedings just for the sake of becoming a nuisance.
That's a fair point. But various new restructuring tools have been introduced across Europe recently that are cheaper than Chapter 11.
Definitely. I completely agree. While there have been these new procedures, examinership has been around for the last 30 years and has been used, and there's case law and it's well developed. When you compare that with the new EU processes popping up that are dealing with newly created law and procedures, it's different. These have only been around since 2020. And the earliest may have been the UK restructuring plan. That was followed by the Dutch WOA, but we've only just seen the Lux process emerge. Now, the bench in Ireland is quite sophisticated because they've been using these procedures for 30 years. There's a dedicated insolvency judge. There are experienced practitioners. And the judges turn around very complicated judgments on very large restructurings quickly when they need to do so. A perfect case for this example is the Ambac restructuring of its SPV Ballantyne. Now, this scheme concluded within 6 weeks, despite a contested sanction hearing, and the court issued its reasoned judgment within 1 day after concluding the sanction hearing.
I can certainly appreciate the importance of cost savings as professionals' costs rise, and we have, of course, seen the judiciary in England comment on this recently, for example, in relation to McDermott's restructuring plan. But when we're talking about cases involving an English element, as you have noted, the relief under Section 426 is discretionary. And also, I would say the doomsday scenario about EU recognition of UK schemes post-Brexit that some EU lawyers were talking about doesn't seem to have really materialized. There must be some cases where the Irish route just wouldn't make sense, and England would be the preferred forum, isn't it?
Yes. Well, obviously, Irish procedures are not going to be right for every case, just as English restructuring plans might not be right for every case either. For example, if you have a case that mostly involves English creditors, English law governed debt, and you're expecting there to be a hugely contentious English element to it, it might not be the right tool, especially given that 426 is discretionary and you would need the examinership to be effective in Ireland. Now, that's not to say it can't be done, but there is potential execution risk that you'd want to evaluate first. An example of where Irish procedures have been very successful is in the large-scale aviation cases. So, for example, Norwegian Air and NACDAC, these are examples of examinership and scheme. And then you also have the quasi-recognition proceedings like ENDO and Mallinckrodt, which are giving effect to US Chapter 11s across Europe. The examinership procedure would equally lend itself to parallel proceedings needed now in England or as a standalone procedure with a 426 application just to cover off and bind English creditors. And with that, you get the automatic recognition under the EIR that comes with examinership.
This is all very interesting, and there's definitely some real food for thought here. But to finish off, why haven't we actually seen a deluge of Irish COMI shifting?
Well, I would say that's because we haven't had this podcast yet. But all joking aside, I think we're still digesting the effects of Brexit. And there haven't been any serious challenges to the recognition of UK schemes. As you said, the doomsday scenario hasn't really arrived. While I think there could be issues there, we'll have to see. And I think that the main reason is that the restructurings are driven by the advisors and their knowledge of these tools that can be used. Now, the UK and US procedures have worked relatively well so far, but we are seeing some cracks forming. The expense of Chapter 11, as you mentioned, is well known, and the criticism in McDermott. We're seeing an increase in litigation in the UK over restructuring plans. And, you know, actually, this has led to a few advisors reaching out on Irish procedures. Most of the US and UK firms don't have offices in Ireland, and I don't think they've really fully explored this option. They have offices in London and other EU jurisdictions, and I think have understandably come up with what would be a good fix for the UK's loss in recognition post-Brexit by offering parallel procedures in London and in the Netherlands, for example. But that's two processes and two sets of legal briefs and lawyers appearing in court and the risk that one of them could possibly go wrong. And also, Irish case law is developing and slightly under the radar. For most lawyers that I've spoken with, they weren't familiar with Silverpail and McInteriors. I think these two cases are groundbreaking, and I think they've really opened the door for more Irish-led restructurings. And as I said, now that more advisors are aware of this, they've been asking me and they want to know more about the potential for using Irish procedures. So what I would say to you is watch this space.
Indeed. Very interesting comments, Kat. I suppose some London and continental Europe-based professionals might take a slightly different view on this, but let's wait and see. And I have to say, this was indeed a powerful and persuasive pitch in favor of the Irish regime. Thank you, Kat, for sharing your thoughts with us today.
Thanks.
To our audience, thank you for listening to Debt Wired. You can download or listen to more episodes of Debt Wired on Apple and Spotify.